Good evening, everyone. Can you hear okay? The speaker is working okay? So, it's one thing to have aspiration, to have an intention, a wish, a direction one wants to go in one's life, a practice, a spiritual practice you'd like to do, inspire to do. It's another thing to follow through with it, to actually act on it. So act, live in such a way that you fulfill that aspiration, that inspiration, that intention, that wish. And for some people, there's a big gap between aspiration, wish, and action, or follow-through. And one of the elements of that follow-through is, in the Buddhist tradition, can be called resolve or determination, sustaining power, sustaining strength that carries one, carries the aspiration and helps us to act on it. So it's not just an idle wish, dreaming or wishing or hoping. And the idea of aspiration or intention or resolve, I like the word resolve. Determination or resolve, that which gives action and persistence and follow through and carry through, is very important, certainly in the teachings of the Buddha. And the Buddha gave a lot of emphasis on action words, on having a strong desire, strong zeal, being zealous in one's engagement in spiritual practice. And there was a word that he used in Pali called adhitana. And adhitana sometimes is translated as determination, sometimes as resolve, sometimes as sustaining power. And it is one of the paramis, one of the 10 perfections. And over the last year, since maybe October or so, I have been giving one talk a month or so here on Monday nights on the 10 perfections, these 10 paramis. And tonight's the night I'm going to talk about the perfection of resolve or determination. One of the beautiful things about the teachings of the Buddha is that he was maybe in modern language we call him a psychologist. He was I don't know if we want to say a scientist exactly, but he was a student of the mind. He studied the mind. He studied all the different aspects of the psyche and how it worked, and he had an amazing analysis and understanding of the different forces and activities in the mind. And that understanding sometimes is presented in the many lists that the Buddha had. Lots of lists, and people sometimes laugh and smile and shrug when we list one more list. The fact that Buddha gave these lists of mental factors, factors that come into play in practice, points to his understanding that the human mind or the human heart, the inner life, is an ecology of many different factors, many different activities. And it's a matter of bringing into harmony or bringing into relationship many different elements of that ecology that help support and sustain practice over time. Some people have a tendency to look for just one thing, kind of look at one thing, this is the thing, this is how I understand things. And the Buddha tended to be systems-oriented. So you look at a system, what's needed in the system of the human mind, of the human being, so the different elements of the system can work together and function harmoniously. So all these lists are kind of pointing to the system and this process approach that the Buddha often had. And so one of these lists is the 10 perfections. And these are, I know them. But who would like to recite the 10 perfections? I'm going to test you. You've been listening to this for many months now. You should know it very well. Who would like to? Before I call on someone, anybody like to? Anybody would like to volunteer? No? Mary, you're not going to go through it? Thank you.
Do I use that?
If you can speak loudly, maybe you don't need to use it.
Okay.
Oh, here,
okay.
Here it comes.
Thank you. Generosity, virtue, renunciation, energy, patience, wisdom. Can I start again? I have to go further than my other.
So she has determination.
Generosity, virtue, renunciation, energy, wisdom, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity.
Beautiful, yes. So you had the 10, a little bit out of order, one, two of them. So there's generosity is the first one, then virtue, then renunciation. And oddly enough, renunciation is also connected to the practice of concentration, practice of meditative concentration. And then there is wisdom, and a lot of these kind of follow each other in some kind of series. So renunciation is a very powerful practice in Buddhism. And a lot of people, especially people, lay people, kind of react to that renunciation. But it's followed right after renunciation by wisdom. And so it's wisdom that helps perfect renunciation so you don't get in trouble. And then there's effort, or energy, engagement. But then that's followed by patience. Because often when you engage energetically, maybe it doesn't go the way you want it to go. And so you have to be patient with the outcome and patient with your efforts. And then there is truthfulness. And then that's followed by the parami, the perfection of today, which is determination, resolve. Then loving kindness. And the last one is equanimity. And it said that equanimity perfects loving kindness. So rather than equanimity being kind of like a party pooping kind of event, it's actually seen in Buddhism as being a very exalted and sublime emotion that really supports everything else. So today it's determination or resolve. And we are now at the eighth parami. Is that right? Yeah, eighth. And that's a little bit important to mention that, because determination is introduced after having first introduced the first seven. So that already there's supposed to be a lot of kind of maturity in spiritual life, engagement, reflection, understanding, that precedes determination and resolve. And I like that because determination and resolve can also end up causing problems for people, especially if there's confusion with striving or with kind of a superego kind of willfulness that kind of overlays and kind of suppresses or pushes one in some kind of way which is not appropriate, kind of an egotistical way perhaps. And kind of self-centered kind of will perhaps. But if determination comes in the wake of practice of generosity, of ethics, of renunciation, of learning to let go properly, of wisdom, of making good effort, of patience, then, and truthfulness, then maybe it's much more easier to practice in a healthy way. Now, these 10 perfections are only perfections. These are 10 qualities, you know, that many people understand and talk about, truth and wisdom and energy and all these things. But what makes them a perfection in Buddhism, what's the word is parami, is when they are connected to two other things. And that one thing has to do with a relationship we have to the world around us, and the other has to do with the relationship we have with ourselves. And the first is they're connected to compassionate concern for others. That somehow that inner quality that's cultivated and developed supports our compassionate concern for the world around us. If there's no compassion, it's not connected to compassion, then it's not a parami. The second quality is it's connected to liberation, our own liberation, our own ability to be free, to be at peace. And those work beautifully together, this idea of compassionate concern for others and this compassionate concern for our own liberation and peace. And they support those two support each other and complement each other and protect each other so that one doesn't get in trouble, one doesn't kind of get too one-sided. There's a beautiful definition of what Buddhist practice is that I like that says that Buddhist practice is not giving up doing anything which causes harm to ourselves or to others, and doing that which brings benefit to ourselves and others. And that's a very simple definition. It has the benefits of not having a lot of metaphysics in it, or any metaphysics in it. You don't have to believe in some deity or super natural kind of understanding of consciousness or our relationship with the cosmos or anything. It's just letting go of what causes harm to ourselves or others. And that movement of being concerned with suffering and the liberation of it is at the heart of compassion and the heart of this idea of liberation. Why is this important to say? And that is that in the developed Buddhist tradition, the Theravadan Buddhist tradition, it's understood that in order to someone to really mature well, deepen spiritual practice, these 10 perfections have to be developed to some degree. They have to be there to some degree. And so what some people will do is try to cultivate and develop these different elements of the inner ecology. So they sustain us, support us, carry us in the long-term project of developing our good heart, our ability to not cause harm, our ability to become free. And so if these 10 qualities are needed, then there needs to be some connection between compassion and liberation. There has to be some connection to other people too. There can't be spirituality in the Buddhist sense can't be self-serving only. It can't be divorced from our sense of our care, our concern for the world around us. There has to be some openness to the world around us, our relationships. And in that openness, then there can be growth of certain kind of inner qualities. When we're closed to the world around us, and our spirituality is kind of inbound only about myself, me, myself, and I, then it's not going to go anywhere. So, determination, resolve. To talk a little bit personally, I love the quality of resolve because I believe it's been one of my strengths. I've done a lot of meditation practice, done a lot of retreats, and I'm very grateful for what meditation practice has done for me. And sometimes people think that I have an ability to get concentrated because of some of the experiences I've had and whatever. And I don't think of myself as someone who has much ability to get concentrated. But what I do have is, because I don't think I have that, some people have an innate capacity for concentration. And it's really wonderful to meet people like that who seem to have that kind of ability. And I never thought of myself as having that ability. But what I have is I have a capacity for resolve. And so when I set myself to meditate on retreats or my daily meditation practice, I've sat with resolve, and that resolve is what has helped me to get concentrated. It's kind of sustained me, carried me, kept me going. And resolve is something, or determination, is a very important quality in many endeavors, because many worthwhile endeavors in human life are not accomplished easily. You can't just say, you know, I'm going to sit down and meditate and become a Buddha. That doesn't happen that easily. You know, I'll do a weekend retreat, and I'm sure that I'll be this age's next savior. It takes a while to develop ourselves, and often that development and growth and liberation of the heart involves a lot of struggle, a lot of facing demons inside of us, darkness inside of us, the difficult aspects of who we are. And so, what is it that sustains us? It carries us. In the difficult times, the boring times, the challenging times. And at least for me, one of those things has been resolve, determination. Okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to do it. I'm going to see it through. I'm going to follow through. And so, day in and day out, I just hang in there. And then slowly, what needs to get aligned, what needs to get integrated, gets aligned and integrated, and then I'm able to get concentrated and develop my practice. I like the word resolve as a translation into English. Maybe this is kind of too cute, but I kind of like it myself, because the word resolve comes from the, I guess, Latin kind of word, solvent or solution, and dissolve. And so, the original meaning of resolve was to untie, or to loosen, or to dissolve. And so, inherent in the word resolve is that movement towards release. Whereas the word determination, for me, it feels harder. I'm going to be determining, or to hold myself this way. Whereas when I'm resolved, there still has to be a dedication, determination. But the word itself is a reminder that at least in Buddhist practice, there's a movement towards release that has to be part of it. And that's a protection against the superego, or the kind of the egotistical will that strives, as it has to be this way, I'm going to get something, I'm going to do this. You can be very determined to let go. You can be very determined, very dedicated, resolved, not to cling. So if there's... It's almost like Buddhist practice is the antidote towards clinging. And so you want to be very careful that your resolve doesn't have clinging as part of it. So your resolve, I'm going to be resolved here not to hold on. I'm going to be resolved not to get attached. And, you know, it's a wonderful movement there. To just, here I am, I'm going to be resolved to be open, rather than being determined and tight and, you know, uptight about, okay, I have to get something right now. That's why I like the word resolve. It's kind of, it reminds me of this dissolving, this letting go, untying. So one of the questions about determination and resolve is, what does it take to have resolve and determination? What does it take to be inspired enough to hang in there and really kind of do what it takes to see something through to the other side, to really follow through on something, when we have so many different desires, or so many different wishes, or so many different messages of our society of what's important. Sometimes a fear stands in the way of resolve and determination. I have a great aspiration to develop my spiritual life. I have a great yearning for it. But to follow through, I'm a little bit afraid to follow through, because maybe then, I don't know, all kinds of things, I won't be able to take care of other things that need to be taken care of. And so I don't think I'll go on retreat this year, because if I go on retreat this year, then I'll miss the World Series, or I'll miss, you know, the opportunity to work more, or put more savings in the bank, or, you know, I'm worried about my finances, or I'm worried about this and that, what my neighbors are going to think, my family is going to think. There's a lot of different things that can stand in the way of us following through. So part of the work of resolve and determination is to look at what stands in the way of our interest, stands in the way of following through on our interests. And as always in Buddhist practice, whenever there's an ideal, and determination here is an ideal, it's healthiest, very healthy, to look at what stands in the way of the ideal. Because if you just kind of determine to go for the ideal, it's a little bit dangerous. But if you understand all the forces that stand in the way of the ideal, then there's the opportunity to let go of all those shackles, all those barriers. And then if the barriers aren't there, then something has a chance to come forth with inside of us, deep inside. Kind of a natural movement. Oh, yeah. And it's my understanding, at least my experience, that determination, resolve, this kind of strength that says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to follow through, here I am, is not just something that we decide to do, but can be, when the barriers fall away, something that the heart or our inner life wants to do. It kind of flows out of us. And so it's not something that takes a lot of kind of gritting or kind of struggle, but it's really sometimes kind of, it's what kind of flows out of us most naturally and easily when the goal is the right goal. Part of determination is having a wise goal, having something that's worthwhile being determined about. So there's a lot of things in life maybe are not so worthwhile to be, you know, to be determined for, be resolved, this is what I'm going to attain. So some of this has to do with a careful study, a careful consideration of what is worthwhile, what do I really want to do, what's really important for me in this life. What is it that I want to work towards and develop? In this light, some people like to do an imaginary exercise where you imagine in 10 years or in 20 years, where would you like to be? And what would you like to look back at that you've done? 20 years in the future, or 10 years or 5 years, seems to me always very far away. When I think back 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, it's like yesterday. So when I remember, oh, that seems like yesterday now, in 20 years or in 10 years or 5 years, today is going to seem like yesterday for 20 years. You know, so that to me makes me get a little bit more serious. Oh, it makes a difference what I do now. The other thing that I like around kind of the analogy is if you take two parallel lines, and I think the definition of parallel lines is they never meet, right? They just go always in the same direction towards infinity. And but then if you take just a little, you nudge one of those lines a little bit apart, it doesn't take much effort, just a little bit, then in the first week, as you go out those two lines, you don't see much difference. The first, you know, mile or 10 miles, you don't see much. But slowly, slowly, they start to diverge. And after, if you have a long enough time, they've diverged quite a bit. So if you have a determination that has kind of a 5, 10, 20-year vision, sight, then a little change in your life, in the direction of your life now, you know, might not make much difference tomorrow or next week, but in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years or 5 years, it can make a huge difference. Just something as simple, maybe it's not so simple, as being determined, resolved, to be very careful with your speech, how you speak. To be very, today I talked to someone who made it her practice to pay attention to how she felt when she speaks. So that's all she did. How do I feel when I'm speaking? And she was shocked. She had no idea there were so many feelings going on while she spoke. She just spoke, right? You know, what you have to say is what's important, right? And so you don't pay attention to anything else. But she started paying attention to what she felt, and you know, it was very, very helpful to her to see that, and very difficult. So do something something like that. Okay, for the next year, I'm going to look at carefully at my speech. That's beginning to kind of turn those, you know, that direction of your life in a little different direction, and you might not see much change in the short term, but in the long term there can be big changes. So determination doesn't have to look dramatic at first. It's something that, okay, I'm going to do this, and then slowly it kind of changes the direction of the life so that in sometime in the future there's a huge difference. Now, in the teachings of the Buddha, there's an interesting brief mention of what Buddha seems to talk about is four things to be resolved about. So then what should be resolved about? And he says, well, these are four things. In the modern Thai tradition of Buddhism, they have the same list of four, but here they seem to understand them to mean these are four things that helps you analyze whether what you're determined about is worthwhile, is appropriate. So either way, it's either four things to be resolved on or four things that help you be clear about your determination. The first is truth, to be determined about truth, to be resolved about truth. So to be truthful, to live an honest life, to be dedicated, determined to live what's honest and truthful. The second is discernment, sometimes called wisdom, to be resolved or dedicated to being discerning. And discerning takes effort, means kind of when you're present in life, to look and see what's really going on. Look twice, look three times, think about it a little bit. At the end of the day, reflect a little bit about what happened during that day. What really happened there? Some people like to journal to understand better. Ask questions. Ask questions of yourself. To be discerning, to explore, to kind of question what's going on in a deeper way. The third resolve is that of generosity. Over and over and over and over again in the Buddhist tradition, in the teachings of the Buddha, he emphasizes the tremendous benefits of practicing generosity. Over and over, he talks about practicing generosity. So the third resolve is the resolve to be generous. The fourth resolve is resolve for peace. To be determined, to be resolved, to be peaceful, to not be in conflict, to work through our conflicts, to let go of our conflicts, or to face them in realistic ways, and not be in conflict with ourselves. For many people in the modern West, they're in conflict with themselves. And often we're in conflict with others. And sometimes because we're in conflict with ourselves, we get into conflict with others. And in fact, if you find yourself in conflict with other people, you might take a little bit of time to discern whether that's just a tip of the iceberg represents some way in which you're actually in conflict with yourself. You might see. It might be interesting to ask that question. So four things to be resolved on, or these are four ways of looking at resolve. I'm determined for something. Now, is it connected to truth? Is it connected to being wise? Is it connected to being generous? Is it connected to being to peace or becoming peaceful? So when we have something we're determined about, we can look at these four qualities and see, is this, help us understand the determination we have. I find it a little bit interesting that the way that Buddhism is often taught in the West, there tends to be a lot of language of acceptance, of acceptance, just accepting things they are as they are, being present, being open, and all very wise teachings. But I don't hear as much the teachings of being determined or resolved, of saying, being having some strength of stability, saying, here I am, I'm going to do this. I'm going to hang in there. I'm going to stick to it. This is really, like a warrior, I'm going to really do this. I'm going to really be dedicated, like a warrior, to be accepting and open. Here I am to do this. And kind of to have spine in the practice, to have dedication, to have strength, to have power, a sense of power, or a sense of great vision of what's possible and follow through. And I think that it's really necessary to have that. If a person wants to follow through on the practice that the Buddha was actually offering, the direction the Buddha was pointing towards. Determination and resolve, for me, is connected to strength, to power. In regards to this idea of determination, resolve, and perhaps it's connected to discipline, again, back to my experience, I spent about 3 years, 3, 4, 5 years, practicing in Zen monasteries and temples. And one of the characteristics of that practice is that it's very much a group practice. And in fact, at the Zen center I was practicing at, you're actually discouraged from practicing alone. Because if you practiced alone, it was a little bit egotistical. Like, you should just follow the schedule. When everyone goes to meditate, you should go meditate. But you don't go meditate extra. Because then you're kind of like attached to your spiritual practice. It's too much, right? So there was a story of one of the very early Americans who went to, in the early 60s, who went to practice at a Heiji, one of the great Zen training monasteries in Japan. And he had a very hard time there. But he was a little bit overly idealistic. And rather than just following the program there, he was going to be the great Zen student. He was going to sit and meditate all the time and be this, you know. And so he was sitting there meditating extra, you know, when you're not supposed to be meditating. And not a good story, not a nice story, but so I'm warning you. So these monks in the monastery kind of ganged up on him, and one of them had a syringe. And the next thing he knew, he was on the train, out, you know, someplace, you know, going towards some other place in Japan. So if you go to a Zen monastery in Japan, be careful how much you meditate. Your determination has to be wise. I met the man. I know him. He told me the story. So where I got lost. Oh, my story about determination. So for many years I did a Zen practice, and one of the wonderful things for Zen practice is that the collective energy of everyone practicing together carries you along. So the bell rings and it's time to go meditate. You don't wonder, you know, should I meditate now? Shouldn't I? Is it a good idea? Is it a great idea? Or, you know, you know that's what you do. It's everybody's going, you know, and you're supposed to go. And if you don't go, then I remember the first time I was at the Zen monastery, Tassajara. I just brand new monk there. I was all new. I was intimidated by the authority of the Zen monastery, you know. And I've been there for a couple of months, and you know, you get up early in the morning, real early. And one morning, I overslept. Just a little bit, but I raced down to the meditation hall. I got there just after they closed the doors. Oh no, I'm late. And it was cold, it was the winter, there was nothing else to do but go back to my room until the doors opened again for the next meditation 40 minutes later. And I was back in my room. I said, oh no, they're going to kick me out of the monastery. I've blown it. No one ever said anything about anything. The next sitting I went and sat, and I never heard about it again. But I was so intimidated by Zen, I thought I was going to get kicked out. But anyway, so in Zen, you know, in monasteries, there was all this collective energy and support. And so the discipline of practicing diligently and practicing all the time, getting up early and doing all the practice, was generated in part by being part of the group. And I found it very valuable. For me, it was very supportive. Then I went to Thailand. And was introduced to Vipassana, the practice we do here. And I showed up at a monastery and said, I'm here to learn what you have to teach me. And the abbot said, okay, good. And he gave me a little, teeny little hut on stilts on the edge of the monastery. And so he said, you stay here by yourself all day and all night. Except you can come over once a day and have your lunch at the lunch place. And once a day you can come and have an interview with me. By the way, stay here and just meditate. And, you know, there wasn't anybody to meditate with this little hut. It's just me and the hut. And this very big pig that wandered around outside. And what I discovered was that's when I realized how much I had relied on the group support to practice in the Zen monasteries. And I realized, when I realized that, I said, oh, what's being called on now is that I have to find that ability, that discipline, that determination in myself. Rather than relying on the group, now it's time for me to do this for myself. And because I've had those years of practicing with others, I think it was a lot easier for me then to muster myself and find the determination, the resolve, the strength of character that it took than to practice alone for 10 weeks. You know, I moved a little bit from that hut, but basically for 10 weeks I practiced sitting and walking meditation alone. And I had a great time. So I say that because determination, I realized at the beginning of that first retreat in Thailand that I didn't necessarily have that strength to be able to practice alone. But I realized this is something I had to muster up and find in myself by applying myself. And so that was something that was developed in the course of those 10 weeks, was a certain kind of strength of resolve or follow through or determination to hang in there when there was no support, kind of immediate support, there was no one watching. In the Zen monasteries, in a sense, someone's always watching. So, you know, it's kind of like a little bit, at least for me, am I doing it right? I want to be a good Zen student, I'm getting approval and all these wonderful things. But in the monastery in Thailand, there was no one to approve me. I mean, no one could care less. I mean, you know, I remember once, for some reason or other, I left my hut and I was wandering around the monastery, which I wasn't, I thought I wasn't supposed to be doing. And to my shock, I ran into the abbot. And to my amazement, he just looked at me completely unconcerned, unreactive way, and continued on his rounds, as if there was nothing to judge about me. What? And that was very freeing. And again, it showed me how much I was concerned about what other people thought about what I did, and that so there wasn't anybody. I was doing it for myself. This idea of learning, in a sense, that I was doing it for myself. I wasn't needing to do it for other people. Was a very important lesson for me in learning this thing of determination and resolve, and to find what is it that sustains my practice when I'm not doing it for what other people think or what other people care. So that was a theme there that retreat in Thailand. So for some people, I think it's really valuable to spend a little bit of time practicing completely alone, because it clarifies so much, it reveals so much. And it helps a lot with the issues of determination, resolve. And we find out what the degree of resolve or lack of resolve is within ourselves, and what needs to be evoked and strengthened and mustered up. And the last thing I'll say is, in order for determination to be a perfection, a parami, it needs to be connected to compassion. So please, always, as you practice in a determined way, resolved way, dedicated way, be sure that it's done compassionately, with a sense of compassion for yourself, compassion for others. And let compassion be one of the guiding lights in your practice. Okay, I think that's enough. Thank you. So this Friday is when we do the next perfection of loving kindness. And then the plan, if everything goes along by plan, then next Monday I'll give a talk on the perfection of loving kindness. Loving kindness follows the perfection of determination. To make sure your determination doesn't go wrong. So thank you.